Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Nitta.
I'm fantastic. I'm exhausted and like living my best life. The Grand Prix series is its own like brand of chaotic vibe.
I feel so blessed. I have not slept in a week, at least. But skating is very much happening, and I don't want to say skating is back, because people have been working very hard through the pandemic and everything. But there was just something about the Skate America vibes where I'm like, this is it, it's back. Like, it's back in the good ways and the bad ways, you know?
Your I haven't slept in a week situation helped me pinpoint the fact that the entire Grand Prix season feels like a manic episode, just one continuous manic episode.
Yeah.
And I think that that energy is finally back this year. It didn't really feel like that.
Yeah.
Maybe it was like a hypomanic episode back when it was just like cardboard canaroms. But now there's real audience members.
Yeah. Oh, God. Like the fact that we had people in the arena and the we're going to talk about it, but like the utter chaos of some of the things that happened, it just felt correct. And I'm thrilled. And let's talk about it.
Okay. So first of all, Skate America this year took place in Las Vegas because they've been having a lot of success with the Vegas bubble. It was bisexual lizard Pope themed.
Can you please elaborate?
I refuse. No.
End of episode.
Yeah. Well, so the Geico Gecko was there as always, cheering everyone on. It's kind of rude to me that everyone else was allowed to come in person, and yet the Gecko still sent a cardboard thing. You know what I mean? Like, what does he have going on?
Well, as a proud parent of a Gecko, I can tell you that they're extremely busy hiding under rock and licking water off of side of terrarium and eating crickets. And that's it.
Maybe they didn't have any good crickets at the concession stand.
Yeah, they didn't have any good crickets because no one from the Toronto Cricket and Skating Club was there. Is that anything?
It would be if you were not engaging in blatant Katya Kurikova erasure.
She's no longer there.
Oh, that's right. Shit, yeah. I don't think that she's left, but she
can't be there because visas are hard. I call my cricket pen with the crickets that I feed my gecko, the Toronto Cricket and Skating Club. It's
those crickets all have like so much self-esteem and joy.
Yeah, and then they get eaten alive. But they are very good at jumping. I will say that. All of them are very good jumpers. Anyway, this is not a gecko podcast, I think.
Well, it is more today than probably other times.
Yeah.
The kiss and cry was like a bi flag with fleur-de-lis on it, but the way that they were situated, if you were the coach and you sat in front of like the big one, it looked like you were the Pope for a few minutes. So that was just entertainment. Okay, so let's quit. I'm choking on literal iced tea. This is like so ironic.
Oh my God, it's like rain on your wedding day.
Yeah. The iced tea betrayed me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, everyone, people who are so rich have already done every joke about everything. What is the Grand Prix series?
They explain it on Yuri on Ice, so if you haven't seen that,
it's extremely accurate.
Gay cartoons explain it. I don't blame you. But it's like the first semester of the skating school year. They have a bunch of competitions, and the top skaters are assigned to one or two of them. And then whoever did the best at all of those gets to go to the final in December. And this was the first of the competitions. Skate America. It happened in America, and they skated. They scat.
No.
Oof, yeah, that means something else, huh?
Yeah, no, I don't know what happens in the bubble, but as far as we're aware, they skated, they were in America. It was a beautiful, very exciting lineup of people, and I'm very excited to talk about it. We are doing something slightly different. Should we talk about this top of show so people are not surprised in terms of coverage?
Yeah, so I love the Grand Prix series because they're these like compact little competitions and they're all bangers, like no skips, high concentration of excellent skating.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about the podium. We're going to do our honorable mentions for our faves. And then on our Patreon, we have our monthly iced tea after show, and we usually do stupid stuff on there. And at least for the duration of the Grand Prix series, we're gonna instead use the after show as an actual after show where we talk in more detail about all the amazing things that happened in the gala and anything else about the event we want to talk about that we just couldn't fit in the main episode.
Yes, which is not to say that the jokes are gonna move, because we're not about to be serious on MAME, but there's just gonna be more of everything. And also, we're not changing our tiers. You can still get access to Patreon the same way you always would, but for the duration of the Grand Prix, at least, there will be more, because it's not just one event per month, and we'll just be dropping those extra episodes on there, so find them.
In case you were ever like, I don't want to listen to them do dumb things, I only care about figure skating, this is now your time to get into the Patreon and be happy with what we're giving you.
Yeah, patreon.com/heistypod, you know the drill. Let's talk about women.
Let's talk about women.
For a second, I was like, can we please have jingles this season? And then I realized I don't want you to die, so let's not.
I know you said jingles, but for a minute I thought you said Jenkos, and I was like, no.
I would like to talk about Jenkos, however, instead I do have to talk about several extremely bad dresses. Can we do that, please?
Sure. In third place with the bronze medal is Young Yu from South Korea.
She did so fucking good.
She did triple axel.
She hit it, and it was beautiful. Like, it was just good and clean and self-assured. Everything you want to see. I'm into it, and I respect it, and she's amazing.
Yeah, I would love to see her emote more. I think she's starting to get there. To do a Les Mis,
it's bold. But I will say, as far as Les Mis, I mean, aside from, like, a South Korean skater doing Les Mis in an Olympic year and all of that, it's a very interesting Les Mis cut.
Yeah, and she skates it, like, really joyfully. I don't know if that's a choice, like, narratively, or if she was just really stoked that she did well by the end of it. I was okay with that.
I mean, I think I tweeted about it or, like, told you about it. I was into it because Les Mis is obviously very, very sad. I don't know if you know that. Les Mis, extremely sad. But in the stage musical and even in the film adaptation and kind of in the book, there's, like, this weird sense of afterlife joy at the very, very end, like with the weird, like, ghostly, this may or may not be a revolution heaven situation. And I thought it was an interesting choice to have her mix end on Do You Hear the People Sing? Because that's, like, that's your big act one finale. This is where people feel like things may or may not work out. And I think it's interesting to take a piece of music and a piece of, like, narrative that's so infamously sad, it's miserable, it's sad, and turn it into this, like, it reminds me of when I was in eighth grade and my high school was doing a production of Rent, but they only did the first act, so no one died and it was super fun.
It's like, we only did the first act of Into the Woods and the first act of Fiddler on the Roof in middle school too, and it's like, Fiddler on the Roof is actually still sad if you only do the first act. Anyway, I think too, doesn't the show end with Do You Hear the People Sing? They do, like, a reprise and they talk about, like, being ghosts.
Yeah, Jean Valjean joins Fantine in the afterlife. It's extremely, extremely Christian for half a second. And then it's just a bunch of, like, barricade boy ghosts who sing about how even the darkest night will end and the sun will rise.
And how to love another person is to see the face of young you.
I mean, I guess.
Okay, but her costumes, though. Her and Kimmy Lim, like, I'm sorry, the Korean women's costumes are just hands down. Like, no one's topping that gorgeousness.
It's such a specific style and it's so recognizable. Like, the flower petal aesthetic of all of their skirts is so beautiful. I don't know how it's different from the way other people have multi-layered skirts, because they're not the only ones, but you know what I mean? It's just so recognizably, like, the South Korean school of making a figure skating costume the past, like, 2 or 3 years, and it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, a chrysanthemum. Like, there's just so many rows of skirt. As opposed to, like, the shame flap, as we've discussed in previous episodes. It's, like, the anti-shame flap.
It is the anti-shame flap, but also it's interesting because it's still so light. It's not like a petticoat, big circle skirt situation. It's just airy and beautiful. And can you tell I've been sewing for the past 10 days?
Yeah, I super can.
My brain is bad. Anyway, Youngyi is so beautiful, and we didn't talk about her short program because it's in Audi, and I don't care about it. I mean, it's fine.
She looked beautiful. The music was like, it went into the pit in my brain where like that genre of like piano stuff goes, and it just goes away.
Yeah. I don't want to say I didn't care for it because it was pretty. It wasn't as memorable as her gorgeous, gorgeous Lame is. Also, that maroon, purple, like deep plum situation in her free skate. So beautiful. On the podium, she was the only person who like climbed her way from the short program. She was like, I think, fifth or sixth in the short program, and then she ended up on the podium because she fucking hustled in that free.
Yeah, she's a really good comeback skater. She really knows how to fight her way back. Correct. So good for her. It was really nice to see her on the podium breaking up the like Sambo supremacy situation.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
So Daria Usacheva from Russia, second place, a Sambo girl.
Yeah.
I like her though.
Yeah, whatever. This is our like second or third quote unquote season of this thing. I can say whatever I want. They haven't sucked all of the life out of her yet. And she's kind of pretty to watch.
She has Evgenia vibes. Like, I don't think she's as good, but I do think that it's a similar deal of being like a Sambo girl who, against all odds, just has so much inherent artistry that even though she's given like dog shit choreography, she can still kind of get into it. I think people want to put Kosternaya in that category too. And I don't necessarily, not because she's not artistic and beautiful to watch, but because she like got away and then came back. And so it's hard to compare her.
I think Kosternaya and like Sasha Trusova, who we're going to talk about in a second. They've done so much groundbreaking shit already that they've transcended that just status of Sambo girl, regardless of their training, regardless of what they represent now, etc. I think they've done a bunch that separates them from the rest of the standardized Sambo thing, despite like the Italian Daniel's best efforts to keep them extremely replaceable again, like I said last week. Or like episode.
It just makes me so nervous and sad. As much as we talk about the lifespan of a female Russian single skater is, you know, the competitive lifespan, I should say, the career is so short, especially like when you skate with a Terry. And it really hammered it home for me in like a really profoundly sad way during this particular Skate America, because I was really struck by how very similar the lineup was this year as it was in 2019 Skate America.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have like Satoko and Kaori, and you have, you know, on the men's side, you have like Nathan and Vincent and Mikhail Brzina and like so many of the same people that it's like this ongoing storyline and they're getting ready for the next Olympics. And then the Russian ladies, it's like every year they're swapping out at least half of them. And it made me sad because I was like, it doesn't matter how hard you work towards the Olympics. You have a 25% chance of your year being the right year based on like nothing.
Yeah. Honestly, props to Daria, who, despite the universe's best efforts, I have good things to say about, even though she truly showed up as a Sambo person, skated a short program to Greatest Showman, and I still fucking vibed. Which, honestly, kind of speaks to her charisma.
She made me like that song more, to be honest with you. Afterwards, I was like, that song kind of does slap. She definitely transcended the shitty Daniil choreo. In the press conference, she just kept talking about how happy she was that she emoted so much and how that's her focus and that's what she wanted to bring to the table. And I think that was kind of smart and like, I don't know. Like, I think you could read it as sassy, but I don't want to put words in her mouth, especially as they've been translated from another language. But it was just funny to me that to be up there with Sasha, who we'll talk about in a second, but who is more known for her technical skill. Yeah. And then to be up there and be like, I'm just so happy that I expressed things with my face and my heart. And you know what I mean? I was like, yeah, there you go.
It is so, so funny to me, though, that at some point someone gave her the note of like, you do know that you have to use your face, right? Like, this is a goal.
I almost wonder if no one did that, though, because if there was someone at Sambo who was doing that, then surely more people would be doing that. It seems to me like the only reason anyone, like that Daria did it at all, is because that's just like sort of who she was as a person. Oh, she did Ness and Dorma, the Jackie Ivanko one.
It was such a huge, huge weekend for Puccini. just...
Puccini was the real winner of Skate America.
Truly, he went home with the medal, every single medal. We had the Tosca, we had the Turandot, we just popped off. And it made me realize that I really enjoy Puccini. Like, I wouldn't think to list him as one of my favorite composers, but I popped off every single time we had one of Puccini's tracks, and I'm like, he's not a 90s rapper, I don't think.
Check out this fire new track from Puccini.
Yes.
I don't like Jackie Evancho, but that's not her fault. Can I? Oh, now here's a spicy one. I was sitting here like, why do I not like Jackie Evancho? Well, because she's very young and they should have let her grow up more before trying to make her sing like an adult. And then I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no. Yeah. Also, I'm on Jackie Evancho's Wikipedia page. She is 21 years old.
Yeah, it's not healthy to force a kid to do that with their voice, like in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I just find that interesting and appropriate.
Yeah. Much to think about.
I will say, if I have to watch like a million of Atari's students win everything all year, I like Daria among the best of those. I would be happy if she was around more.
First of all, I agree. But secondly, if I were Sasha Trusova, I would sue whoever is in charge of my Wikipedia page.
Why?
Because the picture they have of her on Wikipedia is just so extremely bad. And I know she has better pictures, and I know she looks extremely badass. And her entire wiki is so impressive. It's like, here's all the groundbreaking shit she's done and all the shit she's won. And then the picture looks like she couldn't decide if she wanted to be Samara from The Ring or a mermaid for Halloween. And it's upsetting to me. And I wish someone would do her the favor of changing it.
Yeah, it's so weird. I don't really understand how Wikipedia pictures work, but it's my understanding that you're not allowed to change it if you're in any way like the person or affiliated with the person. So it has to be a stranger for some reason. That makes absolutely no sense to me.
Do you think I can edit Sasha Trusova's Wikipedia page just to add a better picture?
I'll find out. We'll have to figure out if you can get the credentials.
I'll find out, and maybe this is my one act of kindness for the year. Anyway, she won. Unsurprisingly, I think we were all expecting it kind of going in.
You know, I understand like mathematically why she won. I was surprised that she was ahead in the short program. I mean,
I felt like I was going fucking insane when she was that far ahead in the short.
Yeah, and her PCS was so high.
What the fuck was that about? And this is no disrespect to Sasha. I felt like I was missing something, and I do not enjoy when that happens to me. I felt like I was not getting, like, not the joke, but like I felt like everyone was having a conversation I was not understanding.
I think, you know, whatever, like, it's every single episode we're like, PCS is dumb and nobody does it right. But this is maybe one of the worst things that I've ever seen happen, to the point where I'm like, actually, like, what could possibly fix this at this point? Because it's just a joke. So I don't even know. But yeah, she got really high artistic marks and just kind of like did some crossovers and some jumps and...
I feel like it's insane to have Satoko Miyahara show up somewhere and not have the highest PCS. And I do mean anywhere. Like, I think Satoko could, like, be at the grocery store and she should still have the highest PCS just walking down the cereal aisle.
I would agree. I hope no one's judging anybody for anything they're doing at the supermarket on the international judging system, but I think I would do okay at consistently always remembering to say hi to the robot janitor.
Good. I'm so proud of you. My supermarket shopping habits are frankly so embarrassing that I can't even joke about them. What I can talk about is, just briefly, as a white Eastern European person, should this Slavic future OGM, because it's going to happen, be doing a Frida program? Please discuss.
Here's what I'll say. I think that if she really seemed to understand Frida's story and, like, her life, then sure. But it's weird that... Okay, so I don't know. Maybe this is, like, too deep and I'm just thinking about it too much. But she's skating to the soundtrack of the movie Frida.
Yes.
And there's, like, this total conflation happening between, like, her skating to the soundtrack of the movie and, like, her doing a program about Frida Kahlo as a person. That feels jumbled to me, because Frida, like, I think most people don't actually even realize, like, everything she went through in her life and, like...
Oh, yeah. People don't fucking know.
They have no idea. So just to hear her be like, she was fiery and passionate. And I'm like, okay. I haven't seen that movie, so I don't know how accurate a picture the movie paints. Even if she has seen the movie, I'm not sure.
I mean, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, so we, like, for example, have a very good friend from grad school who's, like, a huge Frida stan, and we were just joking, like, oh, what if we had her come on and, like, critique it, and...
Wait, hold on. This discredits our friend greatly. She's not just a huge Frida stan. She's a very highly educated theater maker and artist. And
I thought that was implicit in the fact that she went to grad school with us, that well, she would be very accomplished and talented. No, I'm just kidding. No, she's amazing. But what I was going to say was when I was kind of contemplating what would fix PCS, I don't know what could realistically help, but what I would like to see would be, like, choreography judged by a dance choreographer who doesn't really know skating but knows dance choreography, and, like, the what's the one for, like, expressive, like, interpretation of music or whatever, judged by, like, a theater director or something, and have all of them be the actual expertise rather than people who are, like, following the sport and know the storylines and the people and the countries and everything. And that will never happen, but I was like, we could make that happen. We could invite, like, Katie. We could invite, like, a dancer
friend.
First
of all, yes, we can test run this and see what happens. I was gonna say, if this is such a good idea in theory, because you do want people who, like, understand the objective of the thing outside of the discipline where it's happening, but at the same time I feel like those people would have to be trained so much on, like, the understanding, like, the basics of skating and, like, how it happens, because otherwise you run the risk of a dance choreographer reacts to skating, and B, the thing of, like, whichever country's got talent, where people just see things they've never done before, never seen done before, and they're like, well, this looked great to me, I guess 10s across the board for everyone. Because, like, you want to reward, like, trying.
Totally. And I think, like, what it all boils down to is that we haven't got it all figured out just yet. But no, what
Yeah, we have not fixed BCS. Stay tuned.
No, but I was actually, like, the actual objective thing we need, we just don't have the technology for yet, which is we need to either be able to, like, raise judges in complete social isolation and or possibly clones, in order
that
to...
That is the grimmest fucking thing you've ever said in your entire life.
I know, but hear me out. If we can genetically engineer judges who are really good and know everything... And know everything but about Megan. Skating, but have never, like, watched contemporary competitive skating. And so they don't know, like, who's famous or, like, who's coached by whomst. And or, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead, interrupt me, because I have an alternative and it's awful. It's also terrible.
The thing is, as with any, like, AI or cloning or anything that people are, like, terrified that robots will replace them, if you go far, far, far down the line of how this happens, there is a human at some point who programs this cloning or, like, genetically engineers this. And if that person is of a certain country or of a certain whatever, like, political affiliation or what have you, we will be able to peel back the technical layers of this clone onion and just, like, arrive at this perfect sterile clone that has never seen the world and, like, has never seen skating and can only judge skating. It was still programmed by an Estonian engineer, and it will still enjoy Avalon Kivos more than everyone else because at some point a human gave it that.
This is, like, you're, like, so right. I was thinking more of, like, a Never Let Me Go situation. We, like, clone Taffy Holiday and then, like, put her in a mansion. She's just, like, raised there. And she has a soul. But it's like, she's just not exposed to things outside. It's like the village, but skating.
That's terrifying.
It is. The other thing I thought of is we wouldn't have to do that if we had the right technology to make people temporarily unaware to recognize faces and bodies and, like, Havana syndrome people into just being confused about, like, who is this person? Like, I can still see their face, so I can see if they're emoting, but I don't recognize that it's Sasha Trusova.
That is possibly the creepiest thing I've heard in my entire life. And also, I think you found a way to, like, combine Dancing with the Stars and The Voice,
Because I think fundamentally that's like the whole premise of the first part of the talent show, The Voice. Because the entire idea is you cut out like knowing the person's story and like seeing what they look like and all of that and just focus on how good they are at doing the thing they do. And it's so weird to consider doing that with physical body instead of just like a sound.
Yeah, like again, you'd have to be able to see them. You couldn't like use like face blurring technology or anything like that because you have to see the face. You just can't know who it is. So if I can't make judges live a completely isolated life and naturally not know who people are, can we not just give them temporary amnesia?
Hey, this episode is dropping around Halloween. Welcome, surprise. We're doing horror speculative fiction now.
Speaking of creepy things, noted dog lover Sasha Trusova did skate to Cruella, which is a movie about a woman who's... I haven't seen the movie, but I've seen the original cartoon in which she is very much a dog murderer who makes coats out of dogs.
I haven't seen the movie either. I was watching this event with my roommate and his partner, and they were both confused because they have seen the movie. And I was like kind of I was doing the thing where you indoctrinate people into figure skating, and I was having a great fucking time. It was amazing. But I was like, oh yeah, this is Sasha Trusova. She has like this whole thing where like, especially when she was slightly younger, she would like bring her dog out to the podium and it would be like this cute thing. Her brand is dogs. And I told them that in the short program. And then in the free, she starts skating to Cruella. And both of them were like, wait a second.
Can you give me like 1 second? Because I promise I'm listening. Continue. I'm also reading the synopsis of the new Cruella movie because I need to know how they redeemed Cruella de Vil. And it's fucking bonkers.
I have not seen it, but I can tell you what I know from cultural osmosis. And you can tell me if I'm right. I think they've tried to like maleficent the bitch in the sense that they gave her a backstory which redeems why she's a villain.
Yeah, Dalmatians chased her mom off a cliff.
That is, as a person who's been chased by dogs and then ended up being afraid of dogs for like 20 years, I've only recently started being able to like walk on the same sidewalk as dogs. That is fucking insane.
She's also, at some point someone tries to set her on fire, but then she discovers that she was actually like switched at birth.
What?
Apparently it's always been faux Dalmatians and it's all just like slander.
Oh, that's bullshit.
The thing that I need to talk about with the Dalmatian outfit on Sasha
is that it needs to be burned.
Is that it needs to be burned like Cruella almost was in the movie.
It needs to be chased off a cliff by dogs. just the outfit. Just the outfit. Just the dress.
Her dress does have her dog's names written on it as if it wasn't enough of a like weird cognitive dissonance of like, wow, her one public image talking point really has been the pet dogs and she's doing Cruella. How do we square that circle? Let's just lean right the fuck into it.
Wait, the thing is though, when I was talking again with like drag artists and people who appreciate drag about this as it was happening, this could have been so fucking funny and successful. And I do not think it's an Olympic worthy free skate. I think it's going to be absurd in a gross way and not a camp way to have this be what wins her the Olympics, because she will win the Olympics. However, as like a show program or like for exhibitions and stuff, it would be so fucking funny to like earnestly do Cruella as a known dog lover. I think there is a way to pull it off and have it be extremely funny in high camp. And this was not it because it just looked ugly.
Yeah, like let Tina be in the gala exhibition. You know what I mean? Like really.
I think it's such a disservice to her as like the athlete she's billed as the athlete she's worked towards becoming to have this be a potential like OGM program. I think it's stupid.
All right. So as I said before, we're going to be on patreon.com/icedteapod talking much more in detail about everybody else. But we want to do a little honorable mention for some of the other ladies there in a very quick fashion. Do you want to start, Netta?
Yes. Obviously, Kaori Sakamoto. She was so fucking close to the podium. It's 1.04 points between her and Young Yu. And she did fucking amazing. And I adore her so dearly. And she is my favorite.
Yes. Xenia Sinitsyna, whose name I just learned how to say. Apologies to anyone who heard me say it wrong in past episodes. Is a little tiny Russian girl who's not at Sambo, and so her choreography isn't as bad. She's still like a very young skater, but she's very cute and she did very well.
Oh my god, are we doing all of them? I feel like we're doing all of them.
No, we're not. It's
Amber Glenn, Amber Glenn, Amber Glenn, Amber Glenn is the only woman to ever walk this earth. Y'all know we stan, but she talked about how she didn't have a great time in the short program, but she talked about how right before she started skating, she saw all of the pride flags in the audience and she almost cried. And I think that's beautiful. And I think that's a very valid reason to be sort of distracted, because how moving has the audience been towards her? It's been so amazing.
Yeah, and she broke 200 internationally for the first time. You love to Hell see yeah. it. Also, Satoko yes. Miyahara is an angel, and it is honestly like the worst thing I've ever seen on the planet Earth, that the PCS she gets. And I think we've all seen enough atrocities recently, but Satoko getting that low is just, I don't know. That's the real horror story of the Halloween episode.
It is. Kim Yelim is beautiful. I feel like she's grown so much into her style, and it's sort of surprising to see her. I think it's a testament to this lineup of women to have her in eight and still be like, oh yeah, this has been amazing.
Yeah, and I think we can call it there, and we'll talk about everybody else on the after show. So see you there, patreon.com/icetpod.
Men.
we're not going to take a break because you already know about our Patreon, so we don't need to tell you again. Men.
In third place, we have Nathan Chen. That feels funny.
Yeah, that's a weird mouthfeel to it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I enjoy it. I will tell you what I did enjoy, because I'm not worried about my boy. He's going to be fine. I'm not worried. I do enjoy having this man have to pop off this early in the season. We all know I'm a stan. We all know I respect him and I stan and I enjoy. I think it's interesting. I think it's spicy when you're reminded that you're not fucking immortal.
He is doing Nemesis again. It's like a recut version of it with another Benjamin Clementine song. Sidebar, Benjamin Clementine is in Dune. And I've talked about this a lot on Twitter. I can't stop talking about it. He is so fine in that movie. He's in it for like 4 seconds. And it's like, who are you? Space Pope, you're so hot. You have cheekbones for days.
He's so beautiful.
So I think that Nathan was so on top of the world and so unbeaten since the Olympics, or since like post-Olympics, that of course it's like, oh, what's the only thing that you can do at this point is like go back and just do the one thing you did a bad job at ever in your entire life and fix it. And so everyone's like, oh my god, it's cursed, it's cursed, it's cursed. And I feel so bad, because it's like, if he had done well, you wouldn't be saying that. I mean, maybe that's the point, but
see, I'll talk about this as an extremely superstitious person who also thinks it's fucking ballsy to be doing this. I think it's sexy and I think it's spicy as shit to fucking challenge the universe like this and just be like, I know this has been bad before and I'm taking it back. I think that's amazing. I wonder if he'll stick with it. Because if I was him, I think my instinct as a stubborn little Aries moon bitch would be to do it one more time and be like, fuck it, maybe I don't make it to the Grand Prix final, but I'll do it one more time and see what happens. However, everything that he's done since 2018 would be like, oh, let's just go back to La Boheme, let's just go back to Caravan. Like, those, like, gorgeous, gorgeous shorts that he's fucking killed would be safer. And also, I would love to see, like, a 2021 Nathan take on a Caravan. I think it would be very interesting because he's grown so much into what he does. So I don't know. I'm both. I think it's cursed, but I think it's ballsy and I'm into it.
Yeah, and I think that from what I think I have gleaned from Nathan's interviews and stuff, he doesn't seem like the kind of person who would then say, like, okay, we'll do something different. He seems like he just wants to conquer every challenge, because it's very like, no human being can really challenge me, so I'm going to challenge God now.
See, the thing is, though, yes, I do not think he's going to be like, well, it's cursed.
Yeah.
But we noted, like, last year he very openly did not like his short program, which I'm still sad about because I think it fucking kicks ass. But by the end of the season, he was like, I just want to be done with it. And I don't want Nemesis to become that for him, because right now it's this, like, thing. It is his nemesis, and I hate it. It's so on the fucking nose. Like, whoever's writing this is not doing a great job.
Yeah, this is a sports anime. I would be like, can we not? Like, can we please? This would never happen in real life.
It is so on the nose. It's kind of fucking insane. But I don't want, I feel like even with, like, the heartbreak and, like, the embarrassment and, like, the I want to fix this, like, one thing that I fucked up vibe, which is amazing and it's a good narrative, I don't want it to become a chore for him, is the thing.
You know what, though?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've heard, I've seen takes that are like, oh, well, now he's only going to have, like, bad memories with it. To which I would say, like, he's done it as an exhibition a lot and in competitions where he's just won the whole thing. So surely it's not all bad or all good in his mind. I do think that it's interesting that after the short program where he was in fourth, you know, he was like, I'm human. I get nervous before competitions. And
precious. Correct.
Adorable. Correct. Should be precious. Said. Should be said. I think that the general feeling around it was like, oh, how the mighty have fallen. I bet you thought you could never lose, Nathan. I bet you thought you were gonna win forever. And all of his interviews after, and honestly, the fact that he's been rather silent on social media in general, everything kind of points to him, like, actually, if you think about it, never having said any of that and has never at any point been like, I'm the fucking greatest, suck my dick, the way that people seem to think that he is. He literally never said that. He was always just like, every time he was like, I'm glad I did my best or didn't do my best and I might not win forever and that's okay.
Yeah, in fact, like, in the past two or three years, he's always kind of been like, I will not be doing this forever and I'm just doing what I can now. And this has always kind of been his vibe. But people just wanna have the win where they can have the win. And if it makes them happy to be bitter on the internet, then more power to ya.
They want him to be like this, like, fratty jock kind of guy. Which, like, maybe he is, but, like, not in the sense of being like a douchebag. So I'm just saying,
cut everything I'm about to say.
Okay.
Because I'm about to say some spicy shit. Welcome back, dear listeners. I just had a very, very, very spicy take. And if you send me $100 and we'll send you an unnamed, unmarked MP3 of the spiciest take I've ever had.
It was approximately as spicy as the desert planet Arrakis in the movie Dune starring Benjamin Clementine.
Starring? I thought he was there for like a minute.
If we were to rank the star power by who was the hottest...
Is it not known Victorian little lad Timothy Chalamet? I actually really respect him as an actor. This is a completely different conversation. Let us talk about Mozart.
Here's what I wish. Nathan's whole thing for so long was like he never did the same genre twice. He never did the same thing twice. Everything was always different. One year it was like Caravan and then it was Hip Hop Elton John and then it was like fucking like whatever French bullshit. And all I'm trying to say here is the programs this year, obviously Nemesis is recycled in some way. And then the Mozart feels like classic Nathan. I wish he had really busted out something totally different. It does feel like classical music with a beat drop is kind of his thing now.
Yeah. I wonder if he wanted something that he can both be secure in and kind of know where it's going. I will always be a slut for the beat drop. I don't want to speculate anymore, but here's a question for you. Say he's not going to do it, and we've talked about it, but say he decides to do the Olympic year thing and go back to a free skate, which program would you personally like him to bring back?
I actually have thought about this. I think I would like to see Land of All, but I know that... I think we were, like, in the minority for that in terms of, like, really liking it. I think that people – I think in general, I think people would like to see Elton John.
Yeah, I think Rocket Man would be a fantastic Olympic year, like, especially if you're, like, comparing it to, like, something so, like, mellow and soulful as, like, Nemesis. But honestly, I will never forget the way Land of All made me feel, like, when it was really, really, really good. And I would love to have that back. I also wonder if I'm gonna be, like, more sold on the Mozart once I see him perform it when he's not having, like, the anxiety of being a human who's back to competing.
Yeah, I have to say that, like, we're talking a lot about his skating. I just want him to be okay. And I don't want to sound like I'm infantilizing athletes, because that's kind of a pet peeve of mine in this sport.
Want him to feel good.
No, like he's an adult man, and I'm sure he's taking care of himself. But like, I just hope, because I know that the immense amount of pressure that like we've seen like with Simone Biles so recently, where being the very best in the world, there's really nothing that can prepare you for that mentally. And he's been there for so long that I just, I don't know, the look in his eyes when he was warming up for the free skate was a little bit upsetting to me. I don't like to see anybody look like that. And I hope that US Figure Skating and, you know, the ISU and everybody can sort of work together to not put that ridiculous pressure on him going into the Olympics, because, you know, it's very fresh in our minds, like that conversation around athletes and that kind of pressure.
Yeah, I think it's very apt to bring Simone up, because I think like a couple of months ago, it was such a big conversation about like, yes, this is the most important thing, and like we should be taking care of our athletes, and it would kind of suck. And I'm not like catastrophizing. Maybe he just had a fucking off week and he's fine. Like, I don't want to like diagnose the poor man in any way, shape, or form. But I think you're right. And I think it would be a testament to like this continued effort to put people's well-being and putting them in the best headspace and state of mind for incredible performance by providing consistent support. And I think it would be kind of make it as if we were all talking about this summer just to be like trendy on the internet if this doesn't continue through this Olympic cycle, through this Winter Olympics, through like throughout every sport, frankly. And I think we're sadly a long way away from having that be the case everywhere. But
yeah, on the bright side, I think Nathan's like really intelligent, and he also has, as far as I know, like a really close relationship with Michal Brzina, who has spoken a lot recently about the benefits of sports psychology. So at least that's like a conversation that's happening at that club, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a very good thing that we have working examples of sports psychology being implemented in our very good sport. Speaking of people who we've talked about at length needing a sports psychologist in the past and going through it a bunch, can we talk about 2021 Skate America silver medalist Shoma Uno? Because, my God.
It's the first time he's ever gotten a silver medal. Can you believe it?
Just the first time ever. He's never been on any podium. No, I'm so proud of him. This is, since 2019, this has been my favorite storyline to follow, is this sweet, sweet man and the way he's found his way back since the last Olympic cycle.
Also, if you're new and you don't realize that like 90% of what I say is a joke, I was joking. He's won a lot of silver, and that was the joke.
He's won everything. He's won so many things. But then, you know what? We can't recap the past 3 years. He won a lot of things, then he left his coach, he had a very bad time, and then he struggled, and now he lives in a beautiful village in the Alps and is thriving.
Okay, so we'll talk about his skating in a minute, but can I say the one thing that I find the most like moving and inspiring about Shoma this season is that you've like laid down this narrative and a goal for a comeback, what would a comeback for Shoma look like? It could be like skating clean, skating perfectly, being absolutely perfect. But actually what he said in the press conference was that he was like, honestly, like I haven't really been going clean ever on anything, even easy programs. So I may as well just try really hard stuff. And that really spoke to me, because I think a lot of my like growing up into like a full-fledged adult process has been like, yeah, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to sort of like work with what you've got, you know? And I think hearing Shoma say that is like so meaningful, to be like, you're amazing and you fuck up all the time and it's okay.
I think that really ties back to like what we're just talking about with Nathan as well, because Shoma is one of those people who like only one or two people in the world can ever give him a run for his money and what he does. And it's so, so, so important to have that perspective of this does not need to be perfect, and perfect is not what we're aiming for. We're just working with our skill sets. I think that's very, very good. On a less terribly emo note, he has brought my favorite costume back.
Honestly, okay, and here's the thing with that, is that I was so fucking stoked to see it, and then I saw it up close in the Kiss and Cry, and I did see it was a little airbrushed, and I got so angry.
I don't mind it, because I think it gives, like, this very beautiful, like, depth in this particular case.
Yeah,
I will forever be obsessed with the contrast between, like, the gritty an extremely tight glitter parts, and then the flow of the rest of it, it looks like some of it is so like rough and like sandpapery, and the rest of it is like so soft. I just think that this costume, aside from being gorgeous and like so interesting when it comes to like, I mean, men's costumes, as much as some of them are opulent and beautiful, are like usually the same shapes, and I think this one, it has a lot more interesting like flow to it.
It also has that little like peekaboo like on the hip.
Yeah, like the hip situation, like just all of that, like the fact that it's not one continuous piece or like shirt and pants, but also, God, this is gonna get me on so many watch lists. I would like to touch this costume because I think it would be a very good textual experience. I think
I support you.
Some
fully.
Of it is very gritty, and I think some of it is very soft. And I think it will be fun to touch both parts of it at the same time.
Can you just email, like, Instagram direct message Matthew Quaron and be like, I need something so I can stim. Can you help me?
Hi, Matthew. You're my favorite designer, I think, currently, out of everyone who's making figure skating dresses. Can you please send me just tiny, tiny swatches of that gritty, gritty glitter and also the soft velour-looking thing? Please and thank you.
Yeah, can you start making fidget spinners out of your extra material?
I mean, he did make masks.
Right, so it's not out of the realm of possibility. Something to think about.
I'm not doing well.
Okay, but also, I think even though that costume is incredible, the real star of the show was the butt trees on the bolero harness situation.
The butt trees!
Let's talk about the butt
trees. First of all, let's talk about bolero. Bolero is one of my absolute favorite pieces of classical music, or like any music, I think. It makes me remember a past life that I've had. I was very, very little when I first heard Bolero, and it has just lived in me for so long, and it makes me so happy, and it's such a good piece of music. And I'm thrilled that he's doing it because it works so well and it's so gorgeous. And I'm obsessed with the fact that his costume actually features a little Bolero jacket harness situation.
Yeah, I like to think that there was a conversation around, like, what kind of costume would flatter Shoma, because he's petite and maybe a bolero jacket. And then the whole thing was just determined around that. I want to believe that's the case. Also, I did major in music theory, and I want to give everybody a little lesson about bolero. It was actually written for the intro and outro of the Japanese national figure skating competition to be played on NHK. It was written for that television network.
Yes. Correct.
It's a little known fact.
Correct.
So it's nice to see a Japanese skater skate to it.
I will say this for a second there. I truly, truly thought that you were going to give me a fun fact about Maurice Ravel, and I am a little bit sad.
Yeah, it turns out I didn't really go to class a lot, so.
So anyway, the bolero is gorgeous.
It's a weird version, but I kind of like it. Both the Vivaldi and the Ravel are like so emotional and passionate, and it's so easy to take a piece of music that's just like, oh, this is a really popular classical piece of music, and just skate to it like it's elevator music. And Shoma is so expressive that it's just never a question of like, yes, this is the right music for the right person.
He's really grown to be a person who like lives through like every single second of his programs, and it feels he's always been expressive. And he's always been, like, clearly very passionate. But in the past couple of years, he's lost a lot of, like, the frantic quality of that passion. And now it's just so, like, focused and driven. And I think his style has grown to be so recognizable. And it's very, very good.
And he also said in the press conference that it's been really hard for him to not be able to train in person with Stefan Lambiel. Yeah. And I can relate to that. I also
me
have
too.
I have a hard time not training in person with Stefan Lambiel every day.
The same. I'm suffering. I wish I was in a beautiful, beautiful little town in the Alps with Stefan Lambiel just every day of my life. However, life is hard and unfair.
Is that your transition to Vincent?
Oh God. Yeah, speaking of people who won and still did not emote for fucking shit.
Yeah, he did better, I guess.
He did better. I feel like we just talked about a lot of what he did on our last episode, and none of it really changed. So go back and listen to that, honestly. I simply do not have it in me to keep going over Vincent, and I do mean the program, but also the skater. He did better than everyone else in this particular event, and that's undeniable, and it's fine with me. And I don't want to keep going back to, like, comparing him with Nathan and like, what would have happened if Nathan won and all of that. But for the past, just ever, I just, God, there's no way to not be mean. I struggle with the way he talks about himself and the work he's done so much.
Yep.
And I'm such an, I'm a fan of people being proud of themselves. I'm a fan of tooting your own horn. I think that if you're not proud of yourself, like, no one else is going to see your efforts ever. I have taught kids theater. I have openly advocated for people to be their own biggest fans. But there's a way to do it with grace and, like, humility. And there is a way to just sound cocky. And can you talk me through this?
This is honestly the only thing I wanted to say about Vincent today, too. Like, you read my mind. It was just that it's the way he speaks in press conferences. It sounds like it was written by, like, a political speechwriter, which, like, is fine if they're pre-written statements. I've said this a million times. Skaters should read pre-written things if they want to. I'm totally okay with it. So that's fine. But I mean that in terms of, like, it's like he's running for something. You know what I mean? And he kind of is, which is, like, the fucked up part. Like, you get the feeling he's campaigning to, like, be, like, the one pushed for this and that. And it's frustrating because it's like, no one else is using it that way. And so it's just like, read the room a little bit. Like, Shoma Uno's talking about how much he misses Stefan, which, like, fucking same. And, like, Jimmy Ma was up there after the short program, like, yeah, this is crazy. Did not expect to be up here. I love anime. And
it's like, I can't wait to get to Patreon and talk about Jimmy Ma and nothing else. I think you're right. I think it feels like he is not in the same room with everyone else. I think it doesn't matter who else is at, like, the press conference table with him or, like, the before competition things they do. Like, I don't think the context matters to him at all because he is so laser focused on what he is doing and how he is doing it and the way it's been built for him.
Yeah, well, and I think the key point here is, like, the way it's coming off, because we don't know how he feels or why he speaks about the things he speaks about. We don't know if somebody coached him a specific way. We don't know if somebody told him this is what press conferences are for, this is what interviews are for. He could be, like, the sweetest, most humble person on earth, but it's just the way it's coming off makes it seem like he's, like, the only person in the room and he only wants to talk about his training and all the things he did. And it sounds like bragging a little bit slash also trying to prove that he deserves to be there.
I only have the reference point of my own life and our, like, shared experience, but something about the way he speaks reminds me of when you're in a new group of artists. For example, like, first week of grad school, or, like, you're doing a project with people you've not met before. And there's people who will insist on just bringing up every single piece of theory they've read, or like every, in our case, like every single piece of theater they've seen, and proving so, so, so intensely that they know why they're there and, like, that they've earned their seat at the table. And I get imposter syndrome and I understand wanting to, like, belong in the room, but there is a way to do it. And then there is this way of being belligerent about having earned your place somewhere.
Yeah, it does speak of insecurity, and I think that's really sad and relatable. I have felt like that, and I feel like that often.
I feel like that daily, and my God, I hope I don't sound like that.
And I mean, like, maybe I did when I was his age. Like, who's to say? You know, I think that being really, really good at something and figuring out how to talk about that is, like, a process. So I get it. Maybe that's just not his focus. His focus is, like, being really, really good at something. That's his job. So he does it. So I don't know. Maybe we're being too harsh, but it's just, it does rub me the wrong
way. Or
are we
being too generous? It's one or the other.
It's one or the other. It's nothing in between.
It makes me, it's one of those things where I feel like I'm going insane. Like, I was happy that he did good. And I will always be a sucker for, like, someone being happy in the kiss and cry regardless of who it is.
Yeah, that was really honestly very moving.
I remember, and I'll out myself, you were like, you texted me, you were like, yeah, this is honestly very moving, like you just said, and I was sat there like, I feel nothing. Because I didn't. I wasn't mad about it. I was kind of like, yeah, it's fine that this has happened, and, like, congrats to this man, but I couldn't connect with it at all, and I feel like I'm going insane. And maybe that's just a me thing. Maybe I'm mean and bitter. Maybe I just wish he would say trans rights for once.
Yeah, I mean, that would certainly help. I mean, because, like, again, not to compare him with Nathan, but Nathan over the summer had a little oopsie where he said something dumb in a context where he was kind of set up for failure.
He's a known homophobe and he hates women. How dare you?
No, basically, Nathan was in an interview and somebody asked him like a stupid homophobic question and he answered it in a way that, like, taken out of context, made him seem like a homophobe, and in context was just kind of like an awkward response to a bad question. And then he gave a really nice apology about it. And I'm like, cool.
No, so he's a homophobe and he's canceled and how dare you? And it's good that he was fourth in the short program because he needed that because on account of his massive homophobia.
God actually is gay and was mad at Nathan. So
I mean, God is gay. But
God is gay and mad at Nathan Chen.
You heard it here. And also a woman.
And also a woman. But the reason I brought Nathan up was because there's like a ton of my actual skating friends who like I love and whose opinions I really value and who are like, I just don't connect to Nathan. I feel nothing when he skates. And I don't relate to that. And I'm not like mad at it because I'm not a weird person who like bases my friendships off of agreeing on skating things. But I'm like, oh, okay, I feel stuff when he skates and that's fine that you don't. And I just can't picture not feeling stuff when Nathan skates. And then I see Vincent and I'm like, well, some people must feel things when Vincent skates. So I'm trying to see this from the other side. Like, is this how other people feel? Like, is it possible that the human experience is just like so diverse and varied that like you can never truly account for like what is going to spark an emotional response in someone? And isn't that like the worst part about making art, but also the best?
I want it to be about art. I desperately want it to be about art, but everything he does feels so carefully but also wrongly produced to an extent where I'm like, if this is meant to be art that I'm not understanding. I'm fine with the art that infuriates me. There is a lot of art that I hold no respect for that I can still be like, yeah, this is important work. Ask me about Marina Abramovich sometime. Fucking God. Like, I feel like this is, like, the way I feel with, like, Sasha Trusova. I will never connect with what she does at this point of, like, her career, but I can see it and be like, fuck yeah, I respect this.
Yeah.
And I don't feel the same way with Vincent. I do not.
Yeah, you know what? That's a really good point. I think, and it's interesting because the way that you, like, hello, we're supposed to be a comedy show and we're having, like, a really cool conversation that has no fucking jokes in it, but
Yeah, but we're also theater people. This is part of the pitch.
We're qualified.
We do this.
Welcome.
Hi.
I think that, I don't know, I thought it was really cool what you said about, like, being able to separate, like, things that move you in an emotional way and things that you can, like, intellectually recognize could be moving, whether they're moving to you or not.
Yeah.
And I don't personally connect to Vincent's skating, but there are moments when I can see what maybe someone would connect to.
I miss his spread eagles.
Yeah.
The only time I've been like, oh yeah, in his skating is when he, like, surrenders to those, like, massive, like, big spread eagles. For myself, as, like, an emotional observer, those have been the moments where I'm like, oh, this person is, like, feeling a thing. And I miss that.
Yeah. And kind of conversely, just to, like, put a cap on the whole, like, bringing Nathan into this thing, I personally am very, like, moved by the way that he moves. Okay, I'm hosier now, I guess. But I can also see logically, intellectually, like, qualities about his movement that would be off-putting to people that aren't me. I think that you just hit the nail on the head with, like, they're sort of, like, watching intellectually and watching emotionally. And actually, I sort of wish that, like, that was more of a factor in the separation between TES and PCS.
Is that TES and PCS is watching intellectually and watching
emotionally?
Well,
be,
we're
but
back to jokes. We're back to jokes. Welcome to jokes.
It could be, but, like,
whole thing.
What if we had a panel of, like, 600 judges? Do you think it would be fair if we just really increased the sample size?
No, I think you just invented democracy. And I think this is a good way to cull this and move the rest of this party to Patreon, because I need a second beer. And I'm kind of upset about making art now, which is my favorite way to be.
I think if we want to end on a more positive note that really reinforces the joy and inspiration and originality that can come from, like, a true burst of artistic genius, Jimmy Ma took his ponytail out in the middle of his short program, and it was like, this is what art is.
This is what art is, but also this is the perfect marriage of technical and performative, because as he was walking off the ice, I, like, you could hear him talk to his coach and be like, I had to take it off because he was, like, feeling like the hair bubble, like, started to come off. And if a hair tie hits the eyes, that's a costume violation. So it was both art and, like, just being very smart and technical and thinking on the fly and being like, I am killing it right now. I cannot afford a fucking hair tie to ruin this for me.
Yes, exactly. So Jimmy Ma should have won, I guess.
Jimmy Ma is the winner.
Very quickly, social media corner. A couple important things happened. One, a Twitter user tweeted a photo of Shoma Uno and the gecko together, and the caption was,
yes,
congratulations on making friends with the frog. And it was the most important thing that's ever happened to me. And not even joking, like, I feel changed after that.
I think in general, social media corner, and Geico is not sponsoring this episode by any stretch of the imagination, but I think just like all of the gecko interactions have been so vital for this. Jackie tweeting about every time Nam would skate by in practice and high-five the gecko. That one picture of a Terry with the gecko is extremely important.
Extremely important.
I know we don't cover Ice Dance, but there's a picture of Maddie and Evan just looking gorgeous, and the gecko's just behind them, and it looks like they're in a throuple. I think every event should have a cardboard cutout of a lizard.
Yeah, or it could be anything. Like, it could be, like, what's, you know, what's the mascot of your sponsor? You know, I hope they
I think it should be lizards.
Should be the lizards? Okay, well, you know, we can talk about this with the Olympic Committee. I also want to say quickly that if you look up, I believe it was Maxim Trenkov on Twitter, mm-hmm, or Instagram, did a video of Stefan, like, probably drunkenly, but who's to say, dancing in the middle of Vegas and a bunch of people staring at him. And it's like, they don't even know what they're looking at, these fucking Philistines.
They do not know how blessed they are. What else? Plushie corner? Megan, plushies are back.
They're back a little bit. The only one I remembered was that Daria Usacheva received a bird.
Yeah, I didn't really pay attention to them because I was too busy just delighted that we have things back.
Yeah, and it's weird. There weren't that many. So I'm like, were they not allowed? And somebody just decided to be like a revolutionary? I don't know, but...
Even the darkest night will end and the sun will rise.
And the plushies will rise. And
the plushies will rise.
Note.
And that brings us all the way back to Les Mis. And this has been a main feed episode. My God.
My God. Thank you so much for listening. And if you want more on Skate America, patreon.com/iced tea pod. We would like to thank our amazing existing patrons at this time: Mary, Jana, Barbara, a different Barbara, Sunny, Erin, Joe, in spirit, I'm always throwing plushies at Evgenia Medvedeva, Jennifer, Heath, Jules, Danny, and Jordan. We love you very much.
Thank you so, so, so much. We are continuing our coverage of the Grand Prix series live as it happens. So if you can't wait to see us talk about Skate Canada, that will be happening this weekend. And you can see that happen on social media. Megan, where are you on the internet?
My Twitter is at MeganKelleher3. Where are you, Netta?
I'm at Netta Marie. That's NEDA. And then Marie on Twitter and Instagram. I'm also at @N_ice skating if you want to see me ice skate on Instagram. And you can find both of us at IcedPod on Twitter. Also Instagram, but mostly Twitter if you want to see us scream about things as they happen in real time.
Thank you. We will see you very soon for Skate Canada.
Bye.